Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the November 25th, 2022 edition of the podcast. It's a special holiday edition, so we're not going to have our normal theme music, but just so everyone knows, USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google TuneIn, and Google Play. And is, of course, also available at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. This is Chase with, as always, Nick live from the Bahamas in Atlantis. Nick, how you doing?
Doing awesome, Chase. Yep, just on Paradise Island here. Caught the tournament games. Just having a great time. Really, really good fan experience for those that ever want to come down to Nassau. They play it in this. It's a ballroom where the games are played. So capacity is pretty limited. There's not a bad seat in the house. So just overall really good experience and good to see the team in person.
And so, you know, going into this week, I think we had warned everybody that we should not be expecting a championship here and that winning one or two games should be the goal. We won one and then lost kind of two heartbreakers. Lots of basketball to watch, though. So I guess we'll start out with SC. SC beats BYU, has kind of a very comfortable lead in that game, and then it kind of lets BYU slide into a closer score. The game was never really in doubt, but the score got closer at the end, even though the game was much, much more decisive. Goes to the second round to play Tennessee, who had beaten Butler in the first round. And that's a nail biter. That game goes to overtime. Tennessee wins in overtime. And then that leaves us with USC versus Wisconsin. Now, the semifinals, both games went to overtime. So the other semifinal was Wisconsin against Kansas. Kansas wins on like a last second shot in overtime. And in the final, Tennessee knocks off Kansas. That just happened not too long ago. And this morning, USC lost to Wisconsin. Close game throughout. And then kind of in the last 60 seconds or 75 seconds, Wisconsin pulls ahead. So for those of you who watched the game, I'm sure there are some themes. Nick watched the games in person. So let's go to him first. What were your impressions of the three USC games you watched?
Yeah, so I thought they competed really hard in each of them. I don't think the effort was an issue. Boogie Ellis scoring, especially in the first two games, was just really on. I mean, he had some really difficult shots, and we kind of needed it because the offense, I would say, it felt really chaotic in kind of all three games. It doesn't necessarily mean that they were terrible, but there was just like a sense of chaos. And I think a lot of that stems from not having a lead guard, right? And just giving Drew and Boogie such high usages with the current group. I thought the high point was in the BYU game, the start of the second half, kind of from the 20-minute mark to the 5-minute mark, was the best they've played all year. They did exceed my expectations overall. Like, maybe they were just too low coming into the tournament, but BYU was favored in that game, and USC was pretty clearly superior. That Tennessee team is looking like a top five team. I mean, they're 5 in KenPom now after winning the tournament and blowing out Kansas tonight. They are really big in person. A lot of what they did in that game was USC threw a zone on them, and Tennessee didn't really know how to score against the zone. Viscovi did have some open looks that he missed, but most of them were at least somewhat contested until the last one, which was wide open, that he hit late in that game, kind of the dagger. Phillips just is a really good player. He kind of ate them alive with mid-range jump shots. He had a 3 or 2. He's very active on the glass. Just very active player. That was a really impressive performance. He looked like a lottery pick in that game. The USC zone was effective though when they kind of funneled Tennessee into they baited them into shooting like a 10 footer with Jonas Edu, their center. And that ended up being a really good trade-off there. It kind of reminds me of a few years ago when they did that against Colorado and they forced Dallas Walton into kind of that mid-range shot and he missed it a lot more than he made. So that was a good play by the staff, in my opinion. Chase might have a different sense there because he's not as big of a zone guy, but I thought that was effective. And then the Wisconsin game, I thought Wisconsin, if you look at their percentages, they're not a really good shooting team. They had a bunch of guys shoot way above their season-long percentages and career numbers, especially Chucky Hepburn, their point guard. He had some really difficult shots in that game. And, you know, it did feel like we were the better team there and just kind of let it slip away late. And they kind of shot, you know, higher than their season average. They are a really good defensive team. They were top 10 in KenPom D coming into the game, and Tennessee is now the number one KenPom D in the country. So we were facing kind of some really top-notch defenses. And without a lead guard, just put a lot on Drew's plate. And he didn't have great games. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was terrible. He made a lot of threes in this Wisconsin game to keep us in it, but you know, you're kind of seeing the limitations when you have Drew Peterson as your point guard and give him all the freedom to back down. And like he was 1-for-9 from 2 in this Wisconsin game and had a bunch of turnovers against Tennessee. So you're seeing the shortcomings of that, and it's just a roster limitation. But I guess I'll close with this. You know, we did seem like we belonged against Tennessee and Wisconsin. Certainly those were 2 quad one games. Tennessee's a very good team. And the BYU game was, you know, our best win of the season. So while the roster does have limitations, it's certainly a better effort than the game against Mount St. Mary's or Vermont or Gulf Coast. So there are definitely positive signs here as well.
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously I agree with most of your takes very much. So I guess we can talk a little bit about the zone against Tennessee. Because, look, we went zone practically in the entire game. We did kind of hold them in check. It was only when they made the adjustment to go to Julian Phillips kind of from the free throw line in the middle of that zone where they kind of started to finally find something. The other side of that, though, was we really struggled. Even when we forced Tennessee into a miss out of the zone, we struggled to grab rebounds, which is always an issue with that zone. You know, look, I guess in the end, if we would have won, you can't argue with success. And we would have had to say, look, we won. I don't like the idea. I don't, because here's the thing. I think you're placing a ceiling on the team when you go zone. Obviously, maybe there's some teams you feel like you need to go zone against. And Tennessee was a team of athletes that had kind of suspect shooting, and you force them to take a lot of jumpers. You know, maybe you're not really counting on Julian Phillips to kind of rise to the occasion like he did, because otherwise the game plan kind of worked. But you know, we're not even from the zone standpoint. I mean, we're a really good defensive team, but I'm not sure we're a particularly strong zone defensive team just based upon like our rebounding numbers. And I actually think we play man deep. I mean, there's some mistakes here and there. I think those are correctable. And I think we play really strong man-to-man defense. I thought for the most part, we played Wisconsin really strong man defense. There's a couple times where we were double the post where I didn't quite understand why we were doing that. But for the most part, I thought we played pretty good man-to-man defense that whole game. And, you know, we have some interesting players when it comes to defense, like Kobe Johnson. I guess we can go into this a little more. Kobe had an absolutely fantastic tournament defensively. I mean, he almost looked like one of the best defensive players in the country. The problem is you're coupling this with a very, very limited offensive package. I mean, about as limited of an offensive package as you can get. So there were times he hit some shots today. I mean, when he was left completely unguarded in a way that was almost amazing to see. And he hit a couple, he missed a couple. And we decided to go down. We went with him through the end of the game, even when we were behind a little bit and we maybe needed a little more oomph on offense. I think the elephant in the room, everyone's talking about it, the turnovers, especially what we saw from from Drew the last couple games. We didn't really have the turnover problem against BYU until the very end of the game when we were struggling with just kind of like breaking their press. Now, Tennessee and Wisconsin have two of the best defenses in the country, but they're philosophically very different defenses. Tennessee obviously is doing a lot of guard pressure. Wisconsin's playing that kind of pack line defense, and they're, you know, not pressuring the ball as much. That made life a little bit easier for us for a lot of the game, and then we kind of like ran into some trouble later in the game. So we're going to have to like find our way through that. I mean, it's not really worth belaboring the point that we don't have a point guard at this point, because we all know that. So it's, you know, that is what it is. That's life. We got to move on from it. I do think though that we, you know, the expectations placed on Drew have got to be reined in a bit. Andy started pulling Drew when he was made turnovers in the second half today, which I liked, because they were basically unforced turnovers, or at least turnovers where he had caused a situation leading to the turnover, like dribbling into a double team. There's, I think, just a good rule of thumb with especially Drew, Boogie too, but especially Drew. These guys need like a dribble cap on them. They should only, you know, dribble. Drew should not be able to take more than six dribbles on any one possession. Anytime he's dribbling the ball more than six times, bouncing the ball up in a dribble more than six times any one possession, his turnover rate is skyrocketing. That's obvious to see as you're watching. So he's getting a lot of assists at times, but the it's like a lot of this like dribbling where he's not sure what he's going to do, dribbling into the corner, just kind of careless passing. That needs to be reined in heavily, and we just need to come up with some other ideas on offense. Even if that means, I don't know if it means getting Trey White more involved as a ball handler. It's not entirely clear what the solution is, because both Boogie and Drew have somewhat of a dribbling issue. Just Boogie's has not been as profound, because he has not been asked to do as much in recent games after that first game against Florida Gulf Coast. So all that being said, you know, we played two of the better teams in the country in a kind of almost a coin flip type game. I mean, we took Tennessee to overtime. That game could have been won in regulation if we just hit one shot. Wisconsin was determined because we missed a couple jumpers at the end that were makeable. That was a little bit tougher. I have to say too, and I hate to use this excuse, but the officiating against Wisconsin in particular, it seemed like we were getting the shorthand of every call. Whenever there was a 50-50 call, we seemed to be getting the shorthand of the call. So, I think that's a team that if we make proper adjustments over the course of the season, potentially we could, you know, be better, you know, better than that team and beat them on a neutral court kind of decisively. There were times in that game where we were up in a way that looked like, oh, we could actually kind of take firm control of the game, and we just kind of kept letting them back in. So there are some green shoots here for the team that looks, okay, this looks a little good, but we do run into these problems with what to do with the offense when it starts to get really stagnant. And that's going to be an issue in the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is starting to look a little more competitive than we probably anticipated. Washington beat St. Mary's last night. That, I mean, on its own, that could be a fluke. Washington has won most of its games now. I think it only has one loss. And I think you have to at least respect the idea that Washington is going to be a tough out up in Seattle. They're going to win a lot of those home games. So they're maybe potentially a little better than we expected. You know, Colorado's been a schizophrenic team, but they did beat Tennessee. Arizona State has had some big wins. So, and even Oregon State played Duke tough yesterday, which was kind of crazy. And then today, Florida kind of more handled Oregon State, but Oregon State does not appear to be nearly as bad as we thought. Cal will be as bad as we thought. Arizona looks very, very tough. But I think the bottom line is, you know, I'm not sure, other than Cal, every game is probably going to be you're playing a team that can potentially beat you. So I'm not saying that SC is going to, you know, potentially lose every other game. Just it's going to be a pretty competitive conference, I have a feeling. So SC's going to be in a dogfight to win games. So we'll just see how this plays out the rest of the season. But hopefully, you know, maybe we just get some development out of Kobe Johnson on the offensive. But just if he could develop, like one key offensive skill set that like helped his teams get baskets, that'd be so helpful, because otherwise it does feel like we're playing shorthanded on offense when he's out there, and he's such a valuable defense player. Willie Thomas had a really nice move today. He didn't get a ton of run. And I know Trey White's going to get better as the course of the season goes on. So, you know, that's kind of how I'm happy that we beat BYU and so decisively, and we played some tough games. I think we're not nearly as bleak as it looked after that Florida Gulf Coast game and how it looked at times during Vermont. On the other hand, the conference is a bit tougher than I thought it was going to be. And we could still be looking at a kind of a near 500 record, in my opinion. We just have to see what we're looking at. So that's kind of where I am on that.
Yeah, I want to make kind of two more points here. First off, just one last comment on the zone too. I think one of the reasons they went to it was just to protect Josh Morgan, because he ended the game with four fouls. He was in foul trouble. So I think they just didn't want him to foul out and then to have to lean so heavily on Kajani down the stretch. I think that was part of it too. Another thing is this Reese doesn't look right still. I mean, he had eight turnovers in the last two games, five against Tennessee and three against Wisconsin. And that's on like kind of a lower usage rate. He does look a bit slow on defense too. So a lot of this was, and I don't know how public this information was, but he missed pretty much the whole preseason with injury. So his body doesn't look right, and it's definitely still not there.
He looks to me almost like playing old man basketball on the, you know, yeah, in the pickup game. I mean, like his style,
yeah,
it does not look like an explosive style that we would see last season. And we didn't really have him much in at the end of this game today. I mean, we kind of moved on. Yeah. And even when we got Trey White back in, we had Kobe with him. So, I do have to say, too, so a couple points. So as valuable as Kobe was on defense today, I do not think we cannot, at this stage of his development, have him in games at the end of the game where we're down. If we're ahead and we need to stop, yes. But if we're down, having him in like an offensive possession, like a half court possession, to me does not make sense. And that's just my opinion. He's just not going to give you anything really reliable in that half court setting on offense. And I say this, and he has played dynamite on defense. I can't stress that enough. He's been really great. I mean, getting to loose balls. I mean, he's done a lot. He's rebounding. So he's played better in some ways, than I had expected, but the offensive development is nowhere near there. And I hope that we coaches reconsider, in the future, if we're in these similar situations, having him in the game until he's developed that skill set, even play Malik Thomas, in my opinion. Okay. Point two. I don't know how often we're ever going to be in a unique of a situation as we are in today, where at the, you know, 20 seconds to go, we're down by three. We need a three pointer, and the other team has four fouls to give. You need, in those circumstances, you need to have like a play develop where it's like catch and shoot type setting, not dribble the basketball around, because by the time you start dribbling the basketball around, two things are happening. One, since the other team has fouls to give, they can be ultra aggressive. And they can go in and basically foul and just hope the officials don't even call it, just get a steal. I mean, that basically happened today. I don't know if they fouled, but they stole the ball from Drew dribbling around. And two, if you do start to get like what looks to be a good look, they can just foul you and force you to take the ball out again. So I really did not like what we tried to do in the last 20 seconds. I would have gone to a complete – in fact, I probably would not have even called the timeout. I would have just tried to get Boogie to take a three-pointer on a one-on-one if he could get it. So those are just two thoughts. The other thing, Harrison Hornery played quite a few minutes here, especially at the end of the game. I think he acquitted himself well in the minutes he was given. And he didn't do anything bad. He didn't make any bad turnovers. However, again, if we're going into games and these are tight, tight games, and we're having Hornery and Kobe Johnson in together at the end of games, that's a tough package right there for multiple reasons. I mean, you know, Hornery is not giving you hardly anything on offense. And he does not move well enough that he's going to be able to get a lot of offensive rebounds. Also, he doesn't seem to have super great hands either. So he's not like snatching balls. He seems to have a lot of deflections. So I hope there's like a reconsideration of what we're trying to do, because I'm just not sure what the plan is. If we get in these situations in the future, are we going to be going back to that same well? But as we've just discussed, the whole re-situation makes it kind of like we're looking for players who can play. And I guess Kobe stepped up enough that they just want to leave him in the game.
Yeah, I was fine with Kobe. And at the end, we're not up at Hornery in. I think that was a bad move. But just looking at like being there and seeing like how Reese just can't get any separation off the dribble, right? Like his only shot attempts are really like either a transition floater, or if you're running him off a screen where he can elevate. That's kind of it, because anything where he's trying to break somebody down, it's just not going to work. And you know, Kobe in that game, I mean, he was 3 for 7, but 2 for 3 from three. So he had 8 points on 7 shots and, you know, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 turnover and 3 blocks. Right. And Reese was turning the ball over a bunch. And, so unless the marginal advantage for him as a shooter is just that much better, like I just don't know how you can play him over Kobe, this form of Reese, right? Like if you're taking Reese from last year's tournament, like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a legitimate offensive threat and one of the best scorers in the Pac-12, but just seeing him in person, how slow he looks right now, really on both ends too, because he was getting beat on defense, but you know, it wasn't oftentimes resulting in the other team scoring, so you don't notice it as much. But Kobe was, you know, just very active on both ends. Again, 5 assists to 1 turnover. Yeah, the Hornery thing I didn't get. Then he missed the top of the arc open uncontested three, which is a big shot in that Wisconsin game. But yeah, and I just, you know, it's tough. I mean, these were close games. And I'll say this too, right? Like they could have easily gone with a cupcake schedule and they'd be 6-1 right now, but with no quality wins. I'm really glad they played the tournament. I mean, you know, you got to play these kinds of
100%. 100%. That's why you can't get too upset if we lose them. You know, that's right. We showed up and we played hard and we're competitive. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's probably a good dovetail conversation, because I think certainly I've noticed this. I know we talked a little bit about it offline. To me, maybe the headline of the season is, and this is not a big departure from last year, but the transfers that the SEC teams have brought in, schools, Arkansas, Alabama. Alabama is not as many transfers, but you know, they have some, you know, Tennessee as well. That's, you know, it's kind of somewhat of a game changer. You know, obviously we saw Tennessee kind of beat Kansas pretty handily today. You were at the game. What did you think of watching those two teams?
Yeah, their defense is just awesome, man. I mean, this is a crazy stat. You know how many turnovers Tennessee had on offense in that game?
I have no idea.
Tennessee had 24 turnovers and they beat Kansas by 14.
Wow.
Yeah. Just absolutely suffocating defense. They had 15 offensive rebounds. They're a really good offensive rebounding team. Adu had 4. He's just huge. Jonas Adu is huge in person, that guy for Tennessee. And then Kansas just really struggles in the half court, right? I mean, Jalen Wilson was 3 for 17 in that game. So when he's not going, Grady Dick's more of a spot shooter. And, you know, Kevin McCullough is kind of limited to, he's really good defensively, but Joseph Yesu actually had 14 in that game for Kansas. So
he would have been a nice guy to have on this team.
As it turns out, right? Funny how that works, but Tennessee, they were just, Kansas had 7 points in the first 10 minutes of that game. And they were just better in Kansas, quite frankly. So I was, it's kind of nuts, right? Like if you look at the margin, USC played Tennessee and Wisconsin, and Kansas played Tennessee and Wisconsin, and between the two games, right? Like USC had a better margin than Kansas did, but Kansas went 1-1, USC went 0-2. So it's kind of unfortunate how it turned out that way, right? But Tennessee, right? They got, they paid for Julian Phillips, and that was a key addition, obviously, for them with his NIL deal, and Tyreek Key, their transfer at 10 points, and they're a pretty veteran team, right? Like Kamwa, Vescovi, Plavsic, they're all upperclassmen. Ziegler's a sophomore, but played a lot last year. So they're definitely older than our guys are, and they're bigger than our guys are. Like you notice, when we play Wisconsin, they were maybe a little bit bigger on the front line, but not much. Tennessee's like a lot bigger. Those are just really big dudes. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And now Alabama's losing right now, but I mean, you mentioned obviously Key and, Julian Phillips. Alabama's losing right now to UConn, but Alabama, paid for Brandon Miller. And then and they have, Namari Burnett back from injury. And then they brought in Sears from Ohio. So, they're like, which is amazing because they already had all of these, they already had like a whole bunch of point guards, and they were still able to attract Sears to come down there, which is pretty amazing. Arkansas is maybe the biggest example. We've talked about that, at length, but Ricky Council is a stud, and and Brazil is a stud. They're not even playing Jaylen Graham, and Nick Smith hasn't even played this season. Was one of the highest ranked recruits coming
in. Nick Smith's the lead guard, and Anthony Black's like this 6'7" point guard who they get through NIL after they have Nick Smith committed, right? And Anthony Black's a monster too, right? So, now the SEC, they're not playing around in the SEC, that's for sure.
Right, and Auburn picked up that big whose name is escaping
you. Treyor and Johnny Broome.
Yeah, Treyor and Johnny Broome. They got them both, right?
Yeah.
So, we were not in the position to be competitive in that market. Like, our team would be, we'd just be a completely different. If we had Julian Phillips and Darian and Trammell, we would be a completely different team, right? We would not have a lot of those little hiccups on offense. The offense would just move more.
We probably would have won this tournament and would have won the Gulf Coast game. And people would be talking about our team as like a top five team. Right.
Yeah. And that's the difference. And now, so the question is going to be after the season, are we going to be in a position because we've got our, stuff in order, can we now be competitive in that transfer market and go out and get these players that these other schools are getting that are just really, really good? No, I don't want to give up on some of our play. I don't want to give up on Kobe. I mean, he is playing really terrific. I don't even want to give up on Malik Thomas. Yeah. I think he had made a really nice move today for a shot and potential there. But, we got to be frank about some of the players that are kind of on the margins of playing time and what their ceiling is and how low it is. Some of these players just don't have much of an upside, and there's not really much improvement that, is going to make a major difference. And it does limit our team in certain ways. Look, if Vince comes back to this team, I mean, I do expect Joshua Morgan to be back next season. That's going to give us a really big, intimidating front line, potentially, especially if we can get Kajani Wright to play the four. We'll have to see, obviously, what other crazy decisions. I mean, I don't even know if we want to start going down this road, but yes. Boogie Ellis does have one more year of college eligibility. I think we've always been writing that off, but it's almost like if he played well enough, if he could attract a major NIL deal, it might keep him around for another year. And I think we've discovered now, we know what Boogie's ideal role is. He's not the point guard. That's not where you want him. He's kind of like he's like a one guy scoring. He's like a one guy scoring guard that you can almost give the ball to in a one-on-one situation. That's where the role he's kind of finding himself in right now.
I'll say this too, like Boogie's, like he had so many difficult shots in that whole tournament. I mean, his shot making was really exceptional. And these were like, you know, step backs contested, like three level stuff. And, you know, that was really impressive. I think it just needs to be said, like he kind of kept us in some of these games with the shooting.
Yeah. Yes. And, so there will be talk about after the end of the season, and he's going to have his ups and his downs, but there's going to be talk about whether or not there's an effort to try to keep him around another year. We'll have to see about that. You know, this sneaky good team is going to be this UConn team. It's pretty amazing. They absolutely, yeah. I mean, they ran Oregon off the court and just embarrassed them. I mean, I think it was 34-point margin at one point before it got closer. They're beating Alabama. Yep. Alabama handled Michigan State like it was nothing yesterday. And today was UConn is handling them like it's nothing. So they're, Tristan Newton, who we looked at, had been having a pretty good tournament. He's not doing as much today, but they're kind of going to be a surprisingly good team, it looks like to me.
UConn, they should be the number two team in the country, in my opinion, behind Houston. I mean, you look at the roster, right? Sanogo's a beast inside, right? Hawkins is really picking it up. He's a great shooter, former top recruit. Newton, like you mentioned, was great against Oregon. And even though he's only got 7 points today, he's got 8 assists and 4 steals. So just monster. They bring in this Klingon kid, you know, off the bench, who's like 7'2 or 7'3. Andre Jackson's a great wing defender. And they had this other kid, Calcaterra, who transferred from USD, who's just a shooter. They really have everything. They have Naheem Aline from Virginia Tech, another high major kid who transferred over, who started at Virginia Tech. So they are really, really good. Hurley just was very active in the transfer market. Tristan Newton was a super hot name in that market. And, you know, you combine that with really good high school recruits that are sophomores and juniors, and this is what you got, right? And one comment too about Alabama. I don't know if you saw any of that Alabama game yesterday, but this Brandon Miller kid is absolutely exceptional. Like he should, yes. I think he's locked to go top five, and he kind of looks like Kevin Durant did a little bit at Texas.
Yeah. He is phenomenal. And yeah, I'm surprised with the result here. Although you've seen these like NATO kind of like up and down swings because they rely so heavily on the 3-point shot if it's not following. But you know, Alabama is, you know, they've got a lot of guard talent, you know, but again, if they're not hitting their shots, then you can, sometimes mitigate that. One other team, I guess, to discuss certainly, I think is worth discussing is Oregon. I know we talk about them from time to time, but, Bartholomew got hurt a couple of games ago, so he's out along with the South Carolina transfer Cuisinart. So they're down at the guard position. Whatever is going on with Guerrier, he's having a really terrible start to the season. Nafale Dante's been playing great, but that's about it. I know Khalil Ware had like a really nice game yesterday, but that was like his first showing this season. They got blown off the court. Maybe they'll straighten things out when Bartholomew and Cuisinart return. But until that happens, they're in tough straits. They're about to play Michigan State tonight. I think Michigan State is going to bruise them up pretty bad.
Yeah. I'm not a big Cuisinart guy. I think Bartholomew's a good player, like kind of maybe like a high major starter, but he's not a superstar or anything like that. A lot of it is just Richardson has missed his threes, and he's kind of just plateaued as a player. He's a good player, like no doubt, but I think like they were expecting him to maybe be like an all Pac-12 contender, and you just compare him to some of the guys on like Arizona, right? And he's just not at that level. Like Tubelis, right? Different positions, obviously, but Tubelis is certainly playing at a much higher level. So I'm not sure like what's up with Altman. I mean, it's his teams do tend to play better towards the end of the year. So you have to assume they're going to get it together on some level, but it certainly just doesn't have the same feel as the Peyton Pritchard and Chris Duarte and Dylan Brooks days.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Okay. Do you want, should we move over to football a little bit, or is there anything else on the hoops side you want to talk about?
Let's just do our quick update. So we can do this as like maybe like a weekly segment, Chase. So who is the third best team in the Pac-12 now?
Now we're doing the third best hoops team, right, in the Pac-12.
Hoops team, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think Arizona State's got the argument, right? But I don't know. Is it SC? I mean, it's gosh, that's a tricky one. I'm going to say Stanford and just leave it at that. And,
you know, wow, you know, love it.
Who knows? I think between you know, I think if Stanford, Colorado, Arizona State, USC, and probably even Oregon played enough times, it'd be hard to tell the difference after enough games. I mean, I think they're all pretty much on the same level to some degree or another right now. So, just my thought on things. I actually think, you know, Arizona State might be better off with like Bagley not playing for them. It's just a thought I had because, you know, he's just not a reliable guy. I don't know how integrated he is into the team. So, that's an interesting piece. Who's your pick for third best team in the conference?
I actually think it's SC. Okay. You know, so Stanford did play that Wisconsin team too. They lost by 10. I just think like we have the athleticism and physicality to match up with these teams. Liked what I saw overall. And I just can't pick Oregon. Colorado, like, they're going to win a lot of games, but they're just so up and down. I think it's hard to really bet on that. ASU's right there too. I think they've, you know, the Texas Southern loss was brutal. But you know, that's one game. And you know, the Michigan thing, you can't really ignore. That was,
I guess we should probably mention Washington too, there, because they're kind of in there. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Menifield, this freshman that they have out of, is he out of Compass? Where did he go play his prep ball? Somewhere in Arizona.
He's from Flint, but
is he okay? Yeah. I think he'd gone to one of these like basketball mills. He's a fine, like Keon Brooks has played really well for them, you know, the Kentucky transfer. But if you watch his game, it's not like a refined half court offensive game. I think like he's the kind of guy that he might get shut down in the conference against better teams. So I'm not as like sold on him. Minifield just looks really quick to me. Like, so I think, you know, I mean, it'll take him a while to get going, but I think he's going to be an effective point guard for them. So I think, you know, Washington's in the discussion as well. Okay. Switching to football. It's interesting. Yeah. So right now Fresno State is about to knock off Wyoming, which would give them their sixth win in a row. I only bring this up because, you know, after SC beat Fresno, they lost Havner or Hayner, the quarterback, and and they lost to UConn in football, which is bad, and then they lost, you know, pretty decisively to Boise with their backup quarterback, and then Hayner's come back since then. And they basically won every game since he's been back. And they have Boise next week. I really think that if Hayner not gotten hurt, now look, and they might have really taken SC to the wire if Hayner not gotten hurt. But if Hayner not gotten hurt, they would probably be like, I finished the season 10-2, and they'd be ranked, and it would be like another ranked team SC had beaten. And it would really enhance the resume. So it's just some thought in my mind. UCLA, you know, took care of business ultimately against Cal today. So, you know, you're probably going to see a situation where a lot of the teams SC actually did beat were ended up being ranked at some level. Notre Dame game, I think the line is now, I saw it at 4. I know it started at like 4.5 and they gone to 5.5. And then I'm not see where it is it now. It's at 4.5 again, I'm seeing, but who knows. 63.5 over under. That would put the score at right around 34 to 29 in that range, 35-28, somewhere around that, 33-30. What are your thoughts on that? Line over under, you know, what do you think the score is going to look like here?
I would take the over. I don't think we can really stop them, and you know, I'm not sure they can really stop us either. It kind of has a you know, feeling of like a 38-35 kind of game to me. I'm not really sure who wins. I guess I would lean SC. There's a good case to be made that Notre Dame's actually playing better than SC is right now. But I don't think you can totally write off like their Stanford loss or their almost loss to Navy either. That was a 3-point win 2 weeks ago. And when I watch Drew Pine, I just don't see a lot of on talent. And can't really get that out of my head. I just don't think he's quite as prolific as like a Dorian Thompson Robinson kind of player is either. And I do really like being at home. Like I would not feel good about going to South Bend with this team, but you know, at home with the crowd and Caleb's just playing at an exceptionally high level right now. I guess I would lean SC, but you know, like Michael Mayer, their tight end is a lot better than Dalton Kincaid at Utah, and Kincaid went for 16 catches on 16 targets against this defense. And you know, I don't know what the answer is to defend him. So lots of concerns. You know, think we have a very good chance to win, but you know, it's going to be a tough game.
So it's interesting. It almost seems like, cause you were more bullish on us beating UCLA. So it seems like you think this is a tougher game for us than the UCLA
yeah,
game.
I think Notre Dame's better. Yeah, just better
you
personnel.
Know, you know, it's funny because I really was much more concerned about the UCLA game just because of the
really? Yep.
Yeah, this there, you know, it's like, it's how do you stop them? I do think the defense here will actually be able to get some stops. Not a ton. I mean, we still may get you know, 30, 40 points to this team. But, you know, if you go through like SC's games, right? So, you know, where we've really struggled when it comes to like not – like when giving up points, right? We were really struggling with Fresno State until Hayner got hurt. As far as our, I'm talking about defense, the defense was struggling until Hayner got hurt. Well, obviously, the defense really struggled against Utah with Rising and you know, the tight end. Defense really struggled with Arizona, and they have a really good quarterback receiver kind of battery. Cal, you know, the Cal is probably the biggest analog, I guess, because Plummer is not really a great athlete and was able to like get a lot done against SC's defense. So that's like a little more scary, I think, for SC's defense. But most of the other kind of less dynamic quarterbacks, you know, they get first downs and the game would be ugly, but ultimately we'd kind of be able to like stop them for the most part. And you know, hold them under 30. I think that's going to be the case against Notre Dame. So I'm thinking Notre Dame is going to score about 24 points and SC is going to score about 34 points. So 34-24. Wow. That's kind of what I'm thinking here. I mean, you know, and I'm not, we'll just see, maybe I'm totally dead wrong about this, but I just have a feeling. We will see. We will see how it turns out. But that's where I'm going on that one.
Can we talk about the that's the most optimistic I've seen you on this football team. That's hilarious.
Well, mainly because I've watched. Maybe it's because I watched too many Notre Dame games when they played Stanford and Cal, and I didn't watch. I didn't really watch the Clemson game. You know,
like, yeah. Right. No, that's great. You know, do you have any thoughts on the college football playoff committee? Because I have a lot of thoughts here. But did you watch like the? Do you watch those Tuesday shows at all?
I don't watch them. So why don't you? I'll let you give your. I saw Joel Klatt's little commentary on it. But I'll let you give your thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. So Klatt's a pretty good analyst. I don't agree with everything he says, but I think he genuinely does a pretty good job with this stuff. But so it's just there's no consistency with the week to week how they do things. It's like they're pulling things out of their ass, like in terms of criteria every week. So first off, we've got Tennessee at 10. Tennessee manhandled LSU, like wasn't a competitive game. Tennessee beat Alabama at home, right? Like the Tennessee home win over Alabama should knock out the LSU home win over Alabama, right? You think. Both teams have two losses. Tennessee lost to Georgia, who's the number one team in the country, hasn't lost. It was a somewhat competitive game. And then they lost to South Carolina, kind of got blown out, but like it was at South Carolina. LSU, on the other hand, their two losses, they lost to Florida State, who's like, you know, it was a neutral game and they're around 15, decent loss. And they got manhandled at home by Tennessee, right? And their Bama win was very close. It was a 1-point home win. And yet, despite the head-to-head, we've got LSU at 5 and Tennessee at 10, right? Like, what the hell is going on there? You know, on top of that, you've got Oregon at 9 and Tennessee at 10, and both played Georgia. Oregon got absolutely run off the field. Tennessee lost by 2 touchdowns, right? So clearly, like, LSU is getting this number 5 respect because of their win against Alabama, right? Alabama is like the barometer of college football, and clearly they're overweighting that home win for LSU. But then why aren't you giving that same weight to Tennessee's win over Alabama? Why are they down at 10? Why is there a 5-spot difference? You know, on top of that, the committee, you know, they don't consider the home road situation at all, right? So you've got them saying, you know, the mouthpiece for the committee goes on and says, oh, you know, even though LSU has an extra loss compared to USC, we're more impressed by their home wins over Alabama and number 20 Ole Miss. Both those games were in Baton Rouge at home. Then USC's road wins over UCLA, who's number 18, and Oregon State, who's number 21. In theory, right, if you're talking about a road win against number 18 versus a home win over number 7, you would think that would be about the same level of difficulty, right? USC won on the road at number 18 by 3 points. LSU won at home against number 7 by 1 point, right? That should, like, probably knock each other out in terms of quality, right? And then they're saying that, you know, in addition to that, the second best win for each team was LSU beating Ole Miss, number 20 at home, and USC going up to Corvallis against number 21, Oregon State. Beating number 21 on the road in that environment at Reser Stadium, where they have barely lost over the last few years, that's a much more impressive win than beating number 20, Ole Miss, at home, who is now 8-4, and their best win on the season is Troy, right? But then the committee is saying how we were just way more impressed with LSU's wins compared to USC's wins. So even though they have an extra loss, because those top two wins were, you know, so impressive, right? We're going to put them over USC, right? So it's just, the whole thing is a sham. There's no consistent criteria. And I don't even know if it's a conference thing, because they're putting Oregon at 9 ahead of Tennessee at 10. But it seems like they're just making this up as they go along. And again, I still do think that SC will get into the playoff if they take care of business the next 2 weeks. But this system is totally broken and needs a complete overhaul.
Well,
I'll throw it back to you.
I'm not going to disagree with anything you said. It does seem to me that they are artificially inflating LSU so that they can keep, I think they feel like they need to always have the second SEC team available. And if, God forbid, there would be a situation where Georgia were to lose to LSU in the SEC final, that LSU is a comp, you know, is a competent, you know, champion of, you know, of a, because otherwise, the LSU, now look, if they were to beat Georgia, they would have had wins against Alabama and LSU. So that does look good. But yeah, they do not, obviously, the LSU resume as it stands right now is not particularly impressive. It's kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like a, well, you know, they handle Ole Miss and it turns out, well, Ole Miss is kind of hit and miss.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking to see what's, you know, I looked earlier at the SAG run on college football, and a lot of it, I was like kind of struggling with some of the rankings that he had. And it's, you know, those things are tough in football, but let's see here.
They also had a 3-point road win over 6-6 Arkansas against their backup quarterback who could not complete a pass. So that was just 2 weeks ago, this LSU team.
It's, yeah. So like, you know, he is very bearish on both LSU and USC. He has USC like 14. He has LSU at number 10.
Yep.
I think SC probably because all are some of those close games. He has Alabama much higher, number 3. Yep. So I guess that's weighting this. Like, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, that's, I mean, the issue for the SEC, right, is that Alabama has always been one of the two teams, that was going to potentially make a college football playoff. And because they have the two losses and they're not yeah. going to be in the SEC final, they're just like totally out of it, right? So, you know, I think what's going to happen here is I would be very, very, very surprised if LSU was able to kind of like, you know, beat Georgia, you know, unless Georgia, if Georgia's yeah. really that tenuous position that they can't beat LSU, I'd be kind of really shocked because Georgia's looked absolutely dynamite for most of the season. I know they kind of had a off game this past week, but they, you know, they pretty much handled everyone in due course. I mean, Tennessee gave them the toughest game, but they, you know, they've kind of handled everybody. So I'd be very surprised. I do not think that that's going to be a true obstacle because I think they're just going to be LSU. However, the problem does come up, you know, what happens if LSU wins that game, because then they will have these, like, you know, victories against yep. not only Alabama, but Georgia as well. So it's going to be a, you know, true, you know, it's a feather in their cap. I don't know how this is all going to play out. I expect Ohio State to handle Michigan, but I could be totally wrong about that. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. I don't know if Oregon is going to be able to handle Oregon State tomorrow. I don't know what the condition yeah, Bo Nix is going to come out. If Bo Nix plays like he played last week, I think Oregon State might win that game. And then, you know, we're off to playing potentially Utah which would not, you know, I'd rather not play a rematch against Utah. But anyway, yes, I agree with a lot of your comments. It's interesting how highly ranked they have Texas and Sagarin, number 7, well ahead of LSU yep. or TCU. You know, Texas has had this kind of very schizophrenic season themselves. A lot of this is just, it's hard for me to gauge how, you know, where to put these. Obviously, Texas took care of business with Baylor today, but I really think SC controls its destiny. I think if SC beats Notre Dame and they beat either Oregon or Utah, I guess Washington's out of it now that UCLA lost, right? So it's either Oregon or Washington. If they beat them next week, win both those games, I think SC will be in the college football playoff. I don't know if they're going to do it. I do like them against Notre Dame, but you know, if Bo Nix is back healthy for Oregon next week, that's going to be a heck of a game for us to try to win that one. So, but that's kind of where I'm coming from on those.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah. I just think we need some sort of, my one point is just, we need some sort of objective criteria with this playoff ranking, because I think there's a strong case that Tennessee should be number 5 and not LSU. And there certainly shouldn't be a 5-spot differential. But anyway, yeah, definitely agree with you. I think Oregon State has a very good chance. And, you know, on the bright side, right, if they do win that game, they probably jump close to number 15, and that win up there is looking pretty good. So
that's true. That is true.
We'll see how it shakes out tomorrow, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. My take I wish they would bring back a computer model, but the problem is, I know for political reasons, the computer model is going to be garbage. They're going to do things like, oh, we can't take into account. They're going to be like, we can't take into account all the things that really matter, right? Like margin of victory and when the game became statistically improbable for one team to win and where the game was played. You know, that, and that's what you run into, all these like really, really, really dumb political thing. Like, how could, it makes a difference. If you're ahead by, you know, 30 points going into the fourth quarter, and it's statistically like impossible that you're going to lose the game, that's a lot different than winning a game at the last second because the other team missed a 20-yard field goal attempt. I mean, those are just different, and they need to be, those things need to be taken into consideration, but it's like, it's impossible for people to get on board with that for all these like really what I think are nonsensical political reasons. I think all that needs to be considered, and that's just my opinion.
They do seem like they're trying to do it, like with the whole like human element and eye test thing, right? Because if you're looking straight at the resume, TCU should be ahead of Ohio State, right? If it's just about who you beat, right?
Yeah.
And like strength of record, and yet they're dumping them at four, right? So they're looking for a reason to flush TCU if they lose one of these next two games. But
oh, for sure, absolutely.
So they're kind of doing it that way. It's just like when you do that, like you just have no clear criteria where you got this committee dude saying, oh, you know, we weren't really impressed with USC's defense against Ohio State, right? And you know, it's just, it's a bunch of nonsense. And it's not even saying like USC is a top four team on quality, because I don't think they are. Like, I think they're kind of like maybe 5-9 in terms of, you know, level of team. But if you're looking at resume, like it's not close, right? Like it's, so how much of it's eye test, how much of it's resume? You know, it's, and there's really no transparency with the process, right? So you have all these USC fans thinking, oh, you know, the committee stacked with SEC people trying to screw us, right? And you know, these rankings, they're not really SEC biased, I don't think, when you look at Tennessee's placement in it. But it's, you know, I totally get the USC fan perspective when they're throwing LSU at five in this thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll good luck for tomorrow. I thank for that game. And then we'll do another pod next week. So happy holidays to everyone. I hope everyone had a nice Thanksgiving, and we will be back soon. And thank you, Nick, for reporting to us live from Atlantis.
Absolutely. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, and look forward to chatting again.
All right. Fight on, everyone.
Yep, fight on.